Hit a home run and get pre-approved for your next refinance or home purchase at thehomeloanexpert.com. Enjoy the podcast.
Welcome into my weekly visit with Derek Gould of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. We're coming to you in brilliant clarity thanks to the great folks at Lordo's Diamonds. Valentine's Day right around the corner. See the selection. Men's, women's jewelry. LordosDiamonds.com, located in the heart of Ladue. Boy, there's so much to get into with Derek from MLB dropping the hammer on Houston. And then what happens with that? How about Jeff Albert, his connection with Houston, now with St. Louis? We'll get into that. Nolan Arenado, is there a chance that he winds up to be a member of the St. Louis Cardinals in 2020? The recent trade with Tampa Bay, what does that mean? All that will be covered with Derek Gould of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Triad Bank, full-service financial institution established back in 2005. Wide range of commercial and personal banking services to closely help businesses, their owners, and families. I'm a client. You walk into Triad Bank, Jim Regna is right there. He sits you down, you have a cup of coffee. He tells you where you're at, what you need to do, and he'll walk you through it. And it's very, very easy. Triad Bank, triadbanking.com. Proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. Coming up, it's a visit with Derek Gould. It's all aboard the newest restaurant in St. Louis, the Train Shed at Union Station. Perfect place before and after Blues and Cardinal games. Historic St. Louis Union Station is downtown's newest dining destination with Train Shed's creative pub and the Soda Fountain's modern diner. The Train Shed at Union Station, hair saloon for men. You'll receive the perfect haircut, complimentary beverage, relaxing shampoo, hot towel and a mint, complimentary shoe shine, all for just $22. Hair saloon for men. It's our weekly visit with Derek Gould of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com. And Derek, there is so much to get into. And obviously, a lot of it would be concerning normally at this point what the Cardinals may do. And Nolan Arenado will get into that and what has transpired with the trade with Tampa Bay. But First and foremost has to be the hammer came down on Houston yesterday. A.J. Hinch fired. Jeff Luhnow fired. There's obviously a scandal in terms of stealing signs and how that reverberates throughout the game. Time will tell, and there's still more to come. Just your initial thoughts on what happened with the Houston Astros.
Yeah, reading through the release from Major League Baseball, I thought it was interesting. Like, you know, I understand the school of thought. I'm intrigued by it that, like, Major League Baseball forced the Astros' hands with the firing, right? So Major League Baseball suspended Hinch and Luhnow for the next season, for the entirety of the season. Their suspension started immediately, and it went until the day after the 2020 World Series. And I wonder if that effectively fired them, because how do you run a team for an entire year and a team assure Major League Baseball that the GM isn't involved, that the manager isn't involved? You know, I mean, managers are ejected from games all the time and yet still are somewhat involved in them. They just aren't in the dugout. And we know this, and we've seen examples of it. You know, not everybody puts on a fake mustache and returns to the dugout, but their influence is there. How do you assure Major League Baseball that these suspensions are good? If you pull that thread too far, the answer is you fire them. And I thought that aspect was really interesting. It's a steep penalty. I thought it was interesting. The investigation said that, you know, look, they cooperated with the investigation. They did not find that Luhnow was at fault for this. There was a definite sting in the release of the Houston Astros culture, which is something that I've written about in the Post-Dispatch, that a lot of people have talked about in baseball, that you and I have discussed. Were they the villain of baseball, and were they comfortable with it? Did they like their win-at-all-cost attitude, you know, the whistles and all this stuff? And then came the comments. And, you know, Luhnow's comment was sort of like, sorry, not sorry, I didn't know what was going on. Have a good time with your little game. I'll go on and make a lot of money elsewhere. Hinch's public comment, his statement, was a lot more apologetic and, you know, sort of, I was in charge of this. This went on under my watch. He did not mention, and maybe he should have, but at least it's out there, that he mocked this at one point in time. Remember, he was asked directly about the whistles and the sign stealing, and he basically made it a joke. and no joke, man. This has now come down hard on you. I think he'll be back in the game. I don't know if Luna will want to be back in the game.
I was going to ask you that. If you think both these guys are done now?
No, I don't think Hinch is. I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I think he's really well regarded in baseball. We've seen people take tumbles. We've seen players with a lot of talent get suspended and return. We've seen people like that. Alex Cora's name was in the investigation report 11 times. Okay. Now, no penalty came his way in this one, but that's not because he's not going to be penalized. That's because there's another investigation with the team he runs. I think if there's a uniformed member who comes out of this and you wonder, like, where does he fit in baseball in the future? Man, Alex Cora is in a bind.
I was going to go that direction, but there's so many tentacles to this. Some of it relates maybe to St. Louis, and
sure.
I'll get into that. But do you think it taints the world championship that they picked
Absolutely.
Up over the Dodgers? Yeah,
absolutely. I know, but I am not one that they should vacate it. I don't buy that.
I don't like that.
I don't like that idea at all. I don't think there should be a blank. I don't like that college football does that. I don't like that college basketball does that, because we all saw with our eyes who won. You can't erase history. What you need to do is explain history. Like, you know, let people know that, like, the Astros of 2017, you know, whenever we talk about them as a World Series champ, let's tell the story of what then followed. That's my view of history, is, like, I don't think you should, you know, lacquer it over by erasing it and saying, oh, the Dodgers are World Series champ. They're not. We watched that happen.
Do you think that this punishment fit the crime?
No.
Was it hard enough?
No.
What would you have done? Or what are your colleagues saying too about that?
Well, yeah, I haven't talked to too many. I read some this morning, but I haven't, like, reached out and talked to them. This obviously is somewhat, I mean, it's not on my beat, and it wasn't, you know, and I asked, you guys want me to write this, and it wasn't my assignment yesterday. So I haven't really reached around and talked to a lot of people. We will this spring. I will today, you know, to be candid. Try to be honest with you that I haven't done that yet, but I have read a lot. My initial reaction was, does it fit the precedent that they set for the Cardinals, right? Okay. And so does it? Well, I think you could argue it doesn't. Now, it's important to note that Correa was banned for life from baseball because he did not cooperate with the investigation. Atlanta's general manager was banned for life from baseball after the investigation into how he used international money because he did not cooperate and misled the investigation. In this case, there weren't any banned from baseball because they cooperated. So, okay, so that's in line with the precedent. What gets me is this, is when the Cardinals were punished, they gave picks to Houston. When Houston's punished, they lose picks. Where are those picks going? Would it not be precedent for the Astros to give picks to every team they played at home in 2017? Or at least the teams they played in the playoffs? Here are two picks, Yankees. Here are two picks, Dodgers. Yeah, it really stinks that you guys didn't advance and that the trophy's in Houston. You know, go get you another one. You know? I mean, that's the precedent, right? And I wouldn't have balked at that. Would baseball have balked? Would the other teams have an issue with that? Maybe, but you know, there were teams directly impacted by the Houston Astros' actions, just like the Astros claim they were directly impacted by the Cardinals' actions, and those teams did not get restitution. In fact, those teams were told don't comment under penalty. That seems odd.
Hey, Blues fans, join the party all season long at Hotshot Sports Bar and Grill and one of their 11 area locations. Great food and drink specials available during every Blues game. It is your home for Blues hockey. Remember, if the Blues score 5 any game this season, you get Hotshot's legendary tacos for $1 each the next day. Find a Hotshot's near you at hotshotsnet.com. Proud partner of the St. Louis Blues. I hope you know about the Schnucks Rewards app. If for some reason you don't, where have you been? The whole city has been downloading this. If you're a Schnucks Rewards member, you're going to earn points. And the next time you're at Schnucks, you can use those points for money off. Digital coupons on the items you want most. Download the Schnucks Rewards app. Get the app that gets you. For fans that are curious about Jeff Albert,
yeah,
he was with the Astros in 2017. So
he's in the minors.
He was in the minor leagues.
Yeah.
You know, Jeff Albert, can you explain what his role was with the club at that time with Houston?
In 2017. Okay.
And then how this maybe trickles down to him, if at all. Just so you can clear that thing up and give some info out there.
I'll do my best. You know, when the whole whistling thing came, I asked him about it because he was with the team at that time. He was in the majors. He was one of the hitting coaches with the Astros in the majors at the time of the whistling allegations and at the time of the employee taking photos with the perception that they were trying to steal signs. And then their really awful, you know, double agent defense where they're like, no, we were trying to defend against our signs, whatever. I mean, this is an eye roll with a gravitational pull. You know, so Albert was, I asked him about it. You know, he said he did not, I mean, what's he going to tell me? But he said, I did not, you know, I was not involved in that. I was not part of that. This was my role. My role was scouting and prep and working the cage and, you know, really kind of getting trends for pitchers and, you know, a lot of things that the Cardinals hired him to do, which was advanced work on the use of tech for swings, the use of tech for approach, and then the use of advanced analytics for scouting. Okay, so that was his role with it. That was in 18. 2017, he was in the minors, and he was doing a lot of this same stuff, nurturing minor league hitters and preparing them for big league at bats, big league approach. What kind of information, what kind of fundamentals do you need in your swing? How do we measure your swing, whether that's launch angle or exit velocity or any of those things? How do we work on that? Right. Okay. That was his role in 2017, which was the thrust of this investigation. There was an element of 2018 brought into this that would overlap when he was there, and the Astros were found to have, you know, been in violation then as well. He participated with the investigation. Major League Baseball, I believe, met with him at least twice. Certainly, the Cardinals were aware of this. The Cardinals met with Albert, asked him what he knew, just along with Major League Baseball, asked him what he knew. Yesterday, when the finale, you know, when the final report came out, I reached out. I spoke with somebody in the know from Major League Baseball, not attached to either team, who was aware of the investigation and all the different corners that it looked into. And I asked, "Is Jeff Albert facing future punishment, or is his name going to be tied to any of this?" And I was told no. I was told he was cooperative, and that he was helpful, and that he does not face anything or is not being tied. His name, I mean, I've read through the thing. I didn't see his name in there. I was told his name was not expected to be in there. But he has cooperated throughout the whole thing.
Couple of guys, and we mentioned one name earlier, that I think it's fascinating what happens now with Alex Cora.
Yeah.
And the other one would be Carlos Beltran.
Yeah. Two guys with Cardinal ties.
Absolutely.
Of.
And, you know, you're Carlos Beltran.
Beltran, definitely. Cora, maybe a little bit. Most people don't probably know his Cardinal tie.
Well, Beltran, let's start with him. I think it's fascinating that here's the manager now of the Mets. You're in that public of an area of our country in New York, and the media is going to be all over
with
him.
With that team.
And he was a player on the 2017 Houston Astros.
Mm-hmm.
And they've tried to make, and I say they, Major League Baseball in this investigation, and correct me if I'm wrong, more of a look at those that were in uniform as a coach or a manager, not necessarily the players getting hammered on this.
Well, that's the bounds of the commissioner's, you know, scope
of
influence, right?
But what happens, though, as we move forward with this, and Carlos Beltran arrives in spring training, and he's going to be asked about this nonstop.
It's going to be a fascinating corridor there on the east coast of Florida because you got Beltran, then Cardinals Marlins, and then Astros Nationals.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Mets have a stake in this issue, or at least have, you know, questions as it revolves. The Cardinals do. They've been told not to comment on this, mind you, just like other teams have. I don't think Beltran can skate with the notion that, like, well, Major League Baseball has told me not to comment on this. That won't last very long, so they got to figure out something there with the Mets. And then you go down to West Palm, and you got the reigning World Series champs. the team they beat in the World Series, mind you, the team they beat four times at home to win the World Series, and then the Astros who are facing this and now are, I mean, they're staring down not, I mean, chaos and also possibly the end of a really good team that has to recover from this and maybe has a lot dimmer future. So I think it's an interesting quarter. What Beltran faces is fascinating. I mean, the reason why players aren't mentioned in this is because you go through the union to punish players, right? It is a direct line for Major League Baseball to go from the commissioner's office to punishing owners, front office, and coaches and staff. That is a direct line. Do not have to go through anybody.
You think Alex Cora survives this?
He's a coach. So
right.
I don't know how his punishment isn't going to be more severe. And the, like we talked about at the beginning, the punishment was such that it set the stage for the firing. What was Crane supposed to do? Hey, Jeff, take a year off.
Right.
Go find an island somewhere and, we won't talk to you for, I don't know how that would operate.
I agree.
I can somewhat see if an owner were suspended for a year, because we saw that, how would they operate? But a general manager of a team and a manager, if Hinch served this, would he come back as manager? What about the guy who served the whole year?
What about Sean Payton, though, in the NFL when he had his deal?
That's a good example. Yeah, that's interesting. That's 16 games.
That. Yeah, it's a little different. It's a year, but I mean, it's a different sport. But yeah,
and
he came
less
back.
Time,
and
yeah.
Survived it.
And thrived.
Yes.
And do well. Yeah, that's a great, that's a good example. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that Hinch couldn't come back?
I do think that A.J. Hinch will come back.
Do you think he could have to the Astros?
That would have been very tough.
I think he'll be a bench coach and maybe a manager somewhere. Absolutely.
I think if you're the owner, you've got to take this in, and it had been already addressed, and then obviously they didn't pay attention to it or wanted not to pay attention to it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're doing what the commissioner said you can't do.
Right.
If you're Jim Crane, I think his only option was to
put a tent
him.
Over it and fumigate.
Yeah. Yeah, and just try to move it on.
Interesting. Yeah.
I think that's the only way you can do it. Even though that those two guys have been instrumental in getting them a lot of wins and probably making Jim Crane a lot of money.
Yeah.
But still, you got to do what you got to do.
It's so funny because he might have saved the money that he was fined.
$5 million.
No, I know, but now he doesn't have to pay Hinch that in the next contract. Now he doesn't have to renegotiate Lunau for his next contract.
You're going to have to pay somebody.
No, but it can be lower, right? You can go get some guys who are really eager to be first-timers.
Who do you go get? I think that's fascinating, too. You almost have to get somebody that has no ties to
really,
the organization.
Do you? That's
I think
want.
So.
I like Espada, man. I think his time is... I mean, when is he going to get a chance?
And I'll tell you, the other guy that I would love to see get a chance is Moises Rodriguez.
Yeah, Moises Rodriguez is going to
St. Louis
surface.
Cardinals.
Yep, he's going to surface as a GM candidate. Not absolutely. I don't know if it will be with Houston
because of what has transpired in the
past.
Right,
right. Yeah. And I don't know how.
And he had nothing to do with it, but
he had nothing
to
do with it.
Clear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I mean, the
connection.
Tensions are raw between these two teams.
Right.
Mo, met with Crane. We can get in the Wayback Machine back to. Well, remember years ago, Mo interviewed for the GM job in Houston.
Right.
When he was assistant general manager with the Cardinals. So, and then John Mozeliak, Mo, after 2011, while he's trying to negotiate the deal with Pujols, steps aside, goes and meets privately with Crane. And stumps for Lunau, says this is a guy who can lead a baseball ops. This is, gave him a recommendation. Lunau thanked Mo for helping, boost his chances there. Because you remember, I mean, there were a lot of people that were like, well, did Lunau, what fracture did he create with the Cardinals? Is he going to be a fit? The scouts, with the whole comment, Joe Strauss, the late Joe Strauss wrote that story about how scouts were calling him Harry Potter. And asking, when was he going to show up with his wand? And, Mozeliak, to his credit, he lost an employee, but he went and talked to Crane and was like, this is the guy you're getting. This is what, I think. So, I don't know. The tensions are raw. And then, of course, what happened was, Houston tried to poach so many of the Astros or I'm sorry, the Astros tried to poach so many of the Cardinals front office people that at one point in time, Mo was like, this has got to stop, you know, enough already. And one of the guys that he put the, you know, the firewall between, no, I mean, actually pun intended, the firewall between Houston and them was Chris Correa. And said, you got to stop hiring these guys. Now, and how far does this go, right? Like even the Orioles have to answer a question, right? Because their front office was pulled from the success of the 2017 Astros.
Astros, right.
And their front office also came from the 2011 Cardinals.
I would think that one of the first conversations that is going to be in Major League clubhouses this spring, including the Cardinals, is, gentlemen, this is how we do business. And I'm not going to say it's going to deter every single player mm-hmm. or coach or manager or whatever, but man, you can't. Draft picks are so valuable now in the game. And after what's been handed down, and after the commissioners come out and drop the hammer, that it's going to be addressed immediately about we're cleaning all this stuff up. None of it. No more.
Hey, you would know this, and I think you just put it really well that this is how we do business. There was another phrase for it, but isn't that a conversation Tony would have in spring training with the clubhouse? Something along those lines?
I think so, yeah.
Like, here's where the edges are.
Yeah.
Here's how far we go into them, and here's where you cross them for me.
How far do you – I was thinking about this today.
Isn't that something he articulated?
Well, with technology the way it is today
– oh, that's different. Yeah, yeah.
I'm wondering, even back, let's say, 10 years ago, how much of this kind of stuff was going on. I mean, video is such an important part of the game.
Yeah.
It just is what it is.
Yeah.
But with cameras in stadiums, and any stadium you go to, every game's on television, every guy is getting looked at on video, I am curious as to how far this goes beyond 2017. This is the example, because now it's been proven.
Mm-hmm.
But how far did this go back, and who else was involved?
I mean, you have the...
Is this a Pandora's box that's being opened up around Major League Baseball that will go well beyond Alex Cora, Carlos Beltran, and what's happening
entirely
in Houston?
Possible. I mean, there's been the questions of the guy in the white shirt in Toronto. You know, the Rockies have had issues at their ballpark, right? The Phillies have twice. I think it's the Phillies, right, twice with the binoculars.
That's my point. Bullpen.
You know, so you have... Then you have Boston with the Apple Watches. You know, 2 years ago... No, wait, was it this past year? It was this past year at spring training. Major League Baseball came through and outfitted the catchers and pitchers with Apple Watches, you know, for bullpens, and they tried to see if that is a way to create a direct line for signs to limit, like, if those two watches are the only things that can communicate with each other, you know, is that a way to avoid sign stealing? It was cumbersome. They were trying to
figure out. Well, how about Yadi going out? And not much was made of it, but there have been times that he goes out, visits with the pitcher, goes behind the plate, and doesn't put a sign down.
Pittsburgh,
why do you think he's doing that?
Pittsburgh does it all the time.
You know,
Pittsburgh used to be, but here there's a difference though. Can we be honest? Like,
well, sometimes it's defensive alignment. It's you bring the guys in, you say, hey, here's this.
Oh yeah,
sequence.
Yeah.
But I mean,
no, but I mean the way Pittsburgh was stealing signs, okay, like, or the Cardinals perceived them to be stealing, so whatever we're supposed to say. That was different. That was a runner on second base. That runner had earned second base. He had gotten to second base, and he was giving signs back to the hitter.
I remember times.
I don't have a problem with that.
There was nobody on.
Oh, do you?
I do remember a time.
I was trying to look back.
I thought it may have been Milwaukee or Pittsburgh.
No, Milwaukee. So that was the question with Milwaukee, right? Okay, was and that was my understanding. Is there nobody on
base? Am I right about that? I think I am.
I think you are.
Yeah.
But Pittsburgh, it was with a runner on base.
Because I remember we made a point. We said, boy, that's interesting. He goes behind the plate and doesn't drop
and
down
just
a sound.
Stops.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
They just kept going.
It was in Pittsburgh when he stopped giving signs. I don't remember who the pitcher was on the mound.
Yeah.
Did he stop giving signs at all? And Clint Hurdle and all that, and all those folks brought it up. But it was when a runner was on second base, and then he just did it for the remainder of the game.
I know there's a lot of fans that are listening to this, and they're saying, all right, get to Nolan Arenado because we want to see this guy play third base. Yeah, I was interviewed today, and the guy said, what do you think about that? I go, I don't know what you're talking about. Everybody's talking about it. So what are you hearing? What's the latest on Nolan Arenado?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the interest is there from the Cardinals' point of view, you know, and the riddle is also there. I mean, you know, one of the things that we know from trade discussions, right, is the Cardinals have to figure out, like, are the Rockies trying to measure what's the Rockies' motivation here, right? Are they trying to understand his value? Is Arenado pushing to be out? Is that what the bind the Rockies are in? Or are they not interested in moving him at all, and they're just going through this dance, you know, to maybe appease him for a little bit and then get into spring training and see if all is well? You know, as a team, you got to look at that and go, okay, well, then how aggressive can we be? You know, how much energy should we spend on this? And how tricky is that opt-out clause? Can you talk to Arenado? Can you talk to the Rockies to give you permission to talk to Arenado about that opt-out? Because what the Rockies want in return, and what a team like the Cardinals would be willing to give, pivots entirely around that opt-out. I know that the Cardinals are not real keen on adding a $35 million salary to the next year's payroll, to the year after that payroll. You know, so they'd have to come to grips with that. Is this the player that they stretch to do that on? What kind of bind does that put them in 2 years from now when Jack Flaherty, you know, a year from now when Jack Flaherty hits arbitration, and 2 years from now when he starts, you know, you either have him on an extension or you're like getting punched in the gut for his cost. And other players too, Hicks, you know, all of those guys are on deck for arbitration. So how much do you want your payroll for 2022 isolated around two players? I mean, that would be $51 million on your corner infielders.
I'm going to throw it out there. What do you think? Spring training hits, is he a St. Louis Cardinal?
I think he's a Rocky in spring training to start, and then we see exactly who is pushing this. And if he is unhappy, if he does not want to be there, then I think it pushes. Now, I mean, I could be this thing. Who knows? I mean, in talking with people, I'm not sure they know how fast this could move. But the sense is that, like, look, you know, his eagerness to stick around. I mean, 12 months ago, he agreed to an 8-year, $260 million deal. Did not want to go into the market, saw free agency as a place that was basically, you know, a frost zone, and said, I'd rather stick around. I like what we got going with the Rockies. I mean, you look at the comments, they were like, this team built to win. There was a lot of optimism. Does 1 year undo that? Maybe. Maybe he was disenchanted after 1 year. But you know what? At some point in time, that's going to have to reveal itself, and it could in spring.
What do you think it would take to get him?
I think it would take, this goes back to the Rockies' motivation. We'd really like to know what they're trying to, are, do they just want to divest themselves of a salary so that they can then either save money or pivot and keep Trevor Story, do an extension with him? Do they just want to dump salary a la the Marlins and then the deal looks like Stanton? I don't think, that doesn't seem to be them. Do they want a quick reset, which would mean sort of like what it took to get Goldschmidt, where there were major league players involved, players that went right into the major league team? Or do they want the control and they plan a rebuild? That means they want talent from a few years down the line. You know, it does seem like, you know, that they're going to ask for the world. That's the Rockies' MO. That's where the Cardinals have had issues before coming to a deal with the Rockies, is they just don't seem to connect on what's reasonable. From the Cardinals' perspective, the Rockies ask for what's unreasonable. But they're not going to talk Flaherty in that deal. They're not going to talk Dylan Carlson in that deal. You know, if they talk Nolan Gorman, then he's probably going to be the centerpiece of that deal. If they talk Andrew Kisner, then, you know, they're at least now in a position where they could probably have that conversation. If they're going to talk Harrison Bader in that deal, again, the Cardinals, and that's the one that, like, if the Rockies were to talk, I mean, it makes so much sense for the Rockies. But, the Cardinals could have the depth to have that conversation, less so today than they did 14 days ago, but they could. So you see, like, at least the trace outline of where the Cardinals would like to go with those conversations.
In terms
of Hudson,
yeah.
You know, I mean, that would be guy. But that again, goes to the fact that, like, you know, one of the things is when you see trade deals speculated, like, always look at it from both sides and, like, what does a team get out of it? you know, like the Rockies are trading one of the best all-round players in the game if they go through with this. They're going to want certainty in return, and they're going to want control in return. You don't package together four guys who don't have an everyday role with the Cardinals and say, because I recognize their names, here you go, Rockies. Now, they might work out. They might not. The Rockies aren't going to do that. Rockies are going to go, we want this to work out. Look, I mean, again, look at the trades that it took to get Ozuna and, you know, Goldschmidt, or even, like, look at the trade for Stanton or, you know, Sale or any of these other, like, superstars that have moved. There's a sure thing in each of those deals, sometimes two sure things. So, you know, when the Marlins got Sandy Alcantara, they knew what they were getting. You know, it turns out he was their all-star rep and everything like that, but they knew what they were getting. They knew he was a sure thing. Same with Carson Kelly and Luke Weaver. Now, some of them have improved upon it, but they at least knew what they were. If you trade some of the names that have been kicked around out there to the Rockies, which one is the sure thing? Which one? Which one's the everyday player? Which one's the certainty for the rotation? I mean, you have to keep that in mind.
The trade with Tampa Bay, a lot of people looked at the lefty that came over and said, Well, you flip him. Yeah. What was your take on the trade?
Well, that it fit exactly what the Cardinals talked about doing. All I mean, it was finally like the deal that they were talking about doing, Dan. You know, they enter the winter and they said, we want to turn our outfield excess of right-handed batters. We want to turn them, that depth, into things we need. And where that might begin is left-handed depth. They don't have a whole lot of left-handed starting depth or pitching depth, for that matter. They've worked on it over the last year and a half. You know, obviously they drafted Zach Thompson out of Kentucky. That was one of those best available, and thank goodness he was lefty kind of moves. They traded for Yenesis Cabrera from the same team. You know, that was a move to add some depth. Justin Williams, a left-handed hitting outfielder, the only one on the 40-man who wasn't a switch hitter. You know, so, you know, you can see how they've wanted to improve this. And they said that, you know, then they end up turning Adolis Garcia into cash because they have to create room on the 40-man. Well, that didn't do it. You know, they tried to engage teams in talks about Tyler O'Neill. And, you know, the Rays had talked to them about Jose Martinez, I believe, as far back as the trade deadline, with an idea of DH-ing, with him being the DH. So you could see how they were sort of canvassing teams who wanted right-handed hitting outfielders. Texas was the top one, or DH, and trying to get the lefty that matches. And then they go and get a top prospect in exchange for this. I think it's interesting that the Cardinals have now traded three right-handed hitting outfielders from their 40-man roster and have yet to add a player for 2020.
Does it, and we'll wrap it up with this question, does it give you any clarity in your opinion on Dylan Carlson or Marcell Ozuna fitting into the opening day roster for the Cardinals?
Does not. Does not add any to me, and nor to nor when I checked around. I mean, Dylan Carlson, There's two thoughts on this, right? There's like the public comments and then there's the reality. Is that the way to phrase that? Okay, so the public comments are, don't put a whole lot on him. Don't build him up so that if he doesn't make the opening day lineup or the opening day roster, that it's a failure. That is definitely part of what's driving their comments. They're not going to overhype him. They're not going to say we expect him to be a big part of this season. They want to create a thing where he is competing and he overtakes. But if it doesn't happen, that he's not like, oh, I failed or I didn't reach their expectations. Okay. Right. So it's managing expectations with their public comments. Internally, they're like, this guy could storm his way into being the starting outfielder, and we need to be prepared for that. We need to not have a roadblock in his way. This is the talent coming.
Busy weekend. We got the winter warm-up.
Winter warm-up.
Cardinals caravan. We got the writer's dinner and still some tickets available.
Yeah, MetroTix, stlbbwaa.org. That's the website. So other place you can go and get tickets. Big night, you know, sort of the evening that announces the arrival of baseball season. The Red Shaney's Award for lifelong commitment to baseball is going to a certain Hall of Famer, Ted Simmons, and the The Branch Rickey Award for Innovation in Baseball. These are our two signature awards. We're really proud of them. Going to Bill James, who even in our conversation here today, you know, you probably recognized how we talk differently about baseball, and the game is played differently, and the game is managed differently, and certainly the business of baseball is different because of Bill James. So he's coming in to receive the Branch Rickey Award and many other things. Jack Flaherty's Baseball Man of the Year. Paul Goldschmidt wins the Darryl Kyle Award, voted on by his peers. Miles Michaelis will introduce Paul Goldschmidt, so that should be a moment. And then we have some other things. Dexter Fowler will be there at the dinner. Some first-time players showing up for the dinner, and some guys who have made it a habit to come to the dinner are going to be there.
Awesome.
And the Gold Glove for Colton Wong. I could go on and on. The actual Gold Glove will be there for Colton Wong. The actual Manager of the Year Award will be there for Mike Shildt. He'll receive it for the first time in St. Louis, and we hope he keeps it in time to go to New York. There's lots to happen.
Thank you, sir.
We'll catch up next week. Looking forward to it. I'll see you at Winter Warm-Up, right?
You got it. I'll see you then, and then at the Writers' Dinner on Sunday.
Excellent.